Welcome back to Count Me In, IMA's podcast about all things affecting the accounting and finance world. In this special new episode, my co-host Ruba dives into the world of fintech in the Middle East region through an elaborate discussion with Amir Tabish. Amir has close to two decades of experience as a finance professional, advisory board member for multinational companies, and various fintech and wealth tech initiatives. This conversation features the state of the sector in the region, and Amir explains how finance and accounting professionals can leverage these technologies to better support their organizations. Keep listening as we head over to their conversation now.
I mean, you're someone who's acquired a successful career, namely because of your ability to read the trends, really, and the patterns with passion. I mean, looking at the chart, I remember one of the stories was that whether it was your wife's contraction monitor or a financial chart, you have an eye for seeing the patterns behind the, you know, and what they manifest. So you pride yourself on looking past the complexity to see the certainty. How does one develop such an outlook, especially at a critical time like now, where God knows where the global economy is headed and trends are being accelerated or even annihilated in some cases overnight?
Well, as much as I'd like to claim that identifying trends and patterns and forecasting is an inherent skill, it really isn't. Of course, on the other hand, inclination is. Now, there are essentially a lot of things that can take credit for being responsible when it comes to analyzing these prices and trends and patterns, either when one's inspecting them in isolation or in totality. So first of all, when it comes to looking at trends and patterns, it goes without saying that these analytical skills need to be honed. So one has to be in touch with market realities. We have to also look at human behavior, industry changes, social and economic forces, and no amount of experience in the industry can make up for constant and consistent research. To be ever updated and in touch, not just with the events taking place in our industry, but all other events, whether it's culture, whether it's fashion. And the point I mentioned earlier, which is inclination. So being inquisitive by nature allowed me to always look beyond the final result and really go into these matters of causation behind those results. That being said, all who believe that being a man of numbers, someone like me, mildly put, boring, is not really accurate. To be able to analyze these trends and immediately place the ones that are not in tandem with the market environment requires an extremely creative bent of mind. You have to be able to think outside the box when predicting matters of extreme relevance. And one also needs to be very well versed with consumer behavior and producer behavior trends that are a consequence of human psychology. And you have to have an approachable and inclusive outlook to things, which allows you more room to acknowledge the possible mistakes and even benefit in detecting trends that would otherwise go unnoticed. And like you said, in such uncertain times, the only thing we can be certain of is the constant, unpredictable nature of things. And that's when we look at these trends and these patterns and these price formations, we can only do so by living in the moment. And that is something I learned from Master Oogway in Kung Fu Panda, one of my son's favorite movies. He said, yesterday is a history, tomorrow is a mystery, but today is a gift. That's why it's called the present. So Master Oogway was a fantastic trend follower and really good at pattern identification. So it's basically living in the moment.
If we were to look at this particular area, which is your area of expertise and you know, something that's been on an evolutionary scale for the past three decades, we see mostly e-trading, online banking and wealth tech driving it. But there's a recent report by KPMG that stated that over $135 billion were invested in fintech last year globally, and that the transaction value is expected to grow to some $10 trillion in 2023. The Middle East's financial services revenue will account for 8% of these figures. So experts find that this growth is directly related to the increasing number of fintech startups, growth of the Islamic banking sector, and the high mobile penetration, which is above the entire planet. I mean, the UAE alone has 173%. So the UAE also accounts for one third of the total number of fintech startups. We're talking about 46% in the world. But in your opinion, what is really driving such an exponential growth?
Well, the underlying cause behind such results is the foundation really for building fintech development by the UAE regime policymakers. They began to implement these forward-thinking policies regarding fintech since 2017. Two leading financial free zones have actually led development in the fintech space. Abu Dhabi Global Markets on one hand, and the DIFC, Dubai International Financial Center. Now, the DIFC created the Fintech Hive, which was essentially a $100 million fund that gave companies access to accelerator program, mentorship from leading financial institutions and insurance partners. And in 2018, DIFC and Accenture, which is a firm I'm sure everyone knows about, but for those that don't, it's a prominent U.S. consulting company. They signed an MOU to foster growth of fintechs and enable such types of collaboration in the region. ADGM created a RegLab fintech sandbox where fintech participants could actually develop and innovate fintech solutions in a controlled environment. Now, obviously, the after effect of these efforts have not only provided fintech startup much needed confidence and support, it also kind of generated an acceptance from the public, making them popular, so to speak. It's kind of like in football or any other sport for that matter, when sponsorships not only provide teams with the financial support they require, but also the added benefit of being part of the sponsor's PR tactics, which can help grow the public's faith in a team. On another front, demographics and these kind of things definitely play a role. Almost half of the population in the MENA region is younger than 25. And this factor alone allows for a growing market of early technological adopters. Now, the younger the population, the more flexible and adaptable they are to these types of technological investments. And UAE in particular acts as a gateway to a wider region. It enables fintechs to enter emerging markets across Africa, South Asia, and of course the Middle East. Now, this expanded region, along with being an $8 trillion market, is home to 3 billion people, with 70% of them having limited to no access to financial services. Now, although the Middle East constitutes about 1% of the global fintech investment, this sector is growing at a compounded annual growth rate of 30%. This means that for a mere and significantly small investment, the growth levels are multifold and immense. Now, at the same time as ADGM and DIFC created these environments to foster fintechs and enable them to grow, the Central Bank of the UAE and the and ESCA, the Securities and Commodities Authority, they established a dedicated fintech office to set national regulations specific to the industry. In 2018, they launched the Emirates Blockchain Strategy, which aims to convert 50% of government transactions to e-payment services to allow these fintechs to partake in the game. And there have also been different investment funds who have come up over the years, like the Radan Venture Funds, which have raised almost $1.5 billion capital for fintech opportunities. And this has led to the emergence of startups focusing on digital banking, blockchain, cryptocurrencies, insurtech, and so much more. And close to 85% of fintech firms in the MENA region are involved in the payments and transfer sector. Now, these developments are inevitably a product of strategic initiatives championed by a variety of stakeholders. And last but not least, UAE's fintech sector has been embraced by Emirati banks, MSMBD, ADCB, Mashreqam, to name a few, who are now contributing a significant portion of opportunities for the fintech sector by involving digital payments, mobile banking, And in 2018, FAB and Abu Dhabi, they collaborated to launch the Abu Dhabi Digital Authority to help simplify these types of payments in UAE. So I guess I have a strong reason to believe that it was the onset of a mix of various investments, political factors, and focused growth oriented towards policies that have helped set the tone for these fintech startups, the banking sector, and others to help UAE come through on their fintech accomplishments.
I mean, it's brilliant to see also this exponential growth here in the UAE. I mean, really, they're exemplary. I as a resident and someone who's been observing, you know, the kind of commitment that the government has had in identifying, you know, the key trends to follow, it's been really remarkable. But you mentioned the banking sector as well. In Australia, there is data that shows that 300 branches of banks closed last year and 200 in the fiscal year before that. In the Middle East, the impact is equally staggering with, like, for example, you mentioned Emirates NBD. They've been leading this change. I mean, they've invested some 1 billion dirhams, UAE dirhams, in digital transformation initiatives aimed at, like, improving their tech infrastructure, bank offering, customer experience. But would you agree that the banking sector is behind these exponential figures that we're seeing today? And if so, why is that here more than anywhere else?
Definitely. The banking sector has played an important role in the emergence of the fintech sector. As I already mentioned, UAE banks have adopted the latest fintech innovations with significant ease. Whether it's ADCB, FAB, Emirates NBD, they have made it one of their primary objectives, so to speak, to actually employ digital modes of payment and other such services, which have a strong implication on securing the future of fintech. And these banks have also forged very strong partnerships. For example, ADCB linked partnership with Plug and Play in order to bring the Silicon Valley Accelerator to open new offices in Abu Dhabi and integrate some of the best startups with the local financial institutions. And the objective of this partnership was to promote the MENA region in primary areas of finance, travel, hospitality, and healthcare. Furthermore, MSMBD and the AIC Fintech Hive, they announced a partnership in order to certify digital fintech startups that incorporated Emirates MBD's application programming interface sandbox. The API sandbox is a first in its region and has been an important target met in the digital banks transformation program, owing to that one billion dirhams. Now, this has been a significantly large milestone in the coming of age of fintech, and to be able to garner support from these banks has been quite a victory to the industry. We definitely can't take these investments lightly, since they've had such a major impact on fueling a relatively less popular sector, so to speak. There have also been large-scale initiatives and partnerships undertaken by U.S. financial services companies. In 2019, Citi, they held their first MENA FinTech Challenge, offering the FinTech community to rise up to the challenge and set forth their innovations into practical solutions. Through my own experience, I can say that such a move can have an immensely motivating impact on the innovators and founders of these startups. I, for one, can surely relate to the times when I was in business school, when we had to give mock presentations on business ideas, and having these discussion forums often helped when professors would come in and take part in them. It just helps you to realign your goals and take a leaf out of the notebook of people who've already been there and done all of that. Similarly, in 2018, also MasterCard, they conducted their first StartPath Summit in Dubai. They brought together fintech startup raging in the spheres of artificial intelligence, big data, e-commerce, security, financial inclusion, and payments to pitch their ideas and solutions regarding financial services at the summit. Such partnerships, specifically the one regarding MSMBD, has definitely allowed the banks to capitalize on these ideas and the technical expertise of fintechs at a time when technology is the only indication of moving forward. And all of these developments, if you want to call them, were bound to have a kind of a trickle-down effect as local banks begin to partner with fintech firms in order to digitalize quickly. For example, on a close interaction I had with one of the local banks, I learned that they adopted the fintech solution and developed the Emirates Digital Wallet, which stores users' funds and allows them to transfer money through the wallet securely. Now, when these big players in the market start adopting changes in their operating and business models, it's without a doubt that the smaller ones, often they begin to follow suit. And the outcome of this domino effect, if you want to call it, has caused an enormous rise and growth of fintech, especially in the MENA region, and so many other parts of the world, like you stated. It's and the question as to why, simply it's kind of a supply and demand effect, or supply and demand factors, if you want to call them. Advances in computing power have made available and doable innovations in the area of sharing, data storage, online modes of business operate through lower transaction costs. In addition, in the wake of the previous financial crisis, various services such as microlending have been minimized by financial institutions such as banks. However, they've been made available publicly by the fintech companies. UAE banks, they were quick to embrace such global technology transformations and digitization. Now, that being said, there has been a certain degree of contradiction in the sector's ability to embrace fintech as well. There are still cases where some banks are reluctant to integrate fintechs into their strategy. They're following more of a wait-and-see approach. Obviously, these banks are not yet ready to leverage the full suite of fintech at the moment, but they need to partner more with fintech startups to provide a better experience to customer at lower cost. However, the surge is on to constantly adapt and stay connected with a much larger global circuit of changing customer preference. And the banking sector, though a little hesitant, has definitely engaged in these significant partnerships and investments, ensuring their own future in the global fintech market scenario.
I mean, all of these things are mainly driven by you know, digital disruption. So when we look at this universe that we're living in currently, you know, a highly digitalized world where all sectors, I mean, nobody's exempt, have been either disrupted or in some cases knocked off, you know, upside down. This includes the finance and accounting profession, which is, you know, this is mainly the audience that we address here at Count Me In, and where many of the rote tasks that, you know, have been taken over by automation are, you know, putting a big question mark on what is really the future skill set that people need to kind of maneuver. But if you were to look at the two sides of this coin, of this transition, meaning what are the negative implications of, say, fintech on finance and accounting? And on the flip side, how do you think this is actually improving the profession?
Well, as we know, the government has reinforced for pushing for digital transformation with regard to the financial service industry. And that is in order to remain competitive in the global arena, as well as stay on the forefront of evolving customer preferences. Now, the META region, for example, Middle East, Turkey, and Africa, is expected to invest $20 billion on digital transformation this year and up to $40 billion by 2022. And in fact, 30% of the MENA's fintech firms are based in UAE. It goes without saying that such a campaign of this stature is bound to have a major impact on the main industry targeted by the growth of fintech, whether it's the banking sector. And the effect is either direct or a spillover effect. Now, if you ask me specifically about the job market, I'd say that it is expected that a considerable shift will take place, with the average age of UAE employee being under 30. Revenue forecasting is an extremely crucial component of planning. And as a result, there have been common demand for financial planning analysts, financial managers, and developers in 2019. It's just a game of demand. For example, as more and more people switch from traditional cable TV to avidly watching content streaming platforms like Netflix, it obviously created demand for such platforms to crop up in the near future. The same is true with the job market and demand for financial analysts. And if we talk about the banking sector, as more and more customers pivot their preferences toward digital services, banks have in turn also begun to restructure and digitally transform their departments. This has led to a surge in hiring of niche talent and procurement of overseas talent to the region. And a key change we're witnessing is that these banks are focusing on retraining, redeployment of employees as automation trends make its way to the banking sector, which is allowing UAE to move towards a more efficient and improved workforce in the long run. However, although the long-term effects of this structural shift are positive, in the immediate scenario, majority of UAE workforce is employed in relatively rote tasks. And this shift has definitely taken a toll on that specific section. And even it kind of created considerable pressure on the current shortage of skilled employees in the market. The ambiguity of the results is obvious. And I think only time can tell just how well fintech has allowed for the positive restructuring of the banking sector workforce. But in terms of looking at the banks and profitability of the banks, I'd say the fintech revolution could actually reduce the profitability of some lines of GCC banks and change the way they operate. However, major disruption in their lending activity is not expected. And that being said, there are some definite negative effects of the same on retail banking, that is money transfer and foreign currency exchange, as blockchain and cryptocurrencies pose a serious competition to these services. And of course, banks in UAE have not been oblivious to the growing technological trend. They've invested actively in areas of digital and artificial intelligence. Now, their profitability has been on the down low since the biggest oil slump took place after the 2009 financial crisis. But for the time being, the bulk of the bank's main business in the region, that is lending, I think would remain kind of insulted for a significant period of time, as it is relationship-based and the human added value remains significant in GCC, from corporate relationship managers to decision makers. Yet we can't deny that most of risk of disruption is the payment business model, since it is more technology intensive, and thus it can cause banks to adjust their operations through staff rationalization and branch network reduction. Now, on average, banks in GCC are still extremely profitable and efficient by global standards. And in fact, I believe that fintech may even conclude to be conducive in enhancing efficiency of lending operations rather than disrupt them, as a significant proportion of the bank's revenues related to lending and to advisory type of activity. Now, statistically speaking, 86% of the banks estimated that no more than 15% of banks' business would be lost to fintech in the next 5 years, and allowing for fund transfer and brokerage to be the main business line that will account for the disruption.
These are, by the way, some that's pretty mild. I mean, 15% is mild in contrast to the larger figures that we're seeing on AI taking over and automation just overruling most of those road tasks which you mentioned. I'm sure that they represent more than 15% on that scale. So when we look at the online collaboration that's becoming the new modus operandi, realistically, we're talking about an entire ecosystem that's been potentially founded in the cloud, you know, with even financial management systems becoming cloud-based. But despite the new laws being applied by regulatory bodies in the GCC, namely NED, for example, in the UAE and Saudi, those were the most mature markets really at that scale, there are major concerns around security and data protection when it comes to fintech solutions, amongst other things. This is validated, for example, through a substantial increase in the number of cybersecurity-focused fintech companies. How can accounting and finance professionals ensure that, you know, it's not just ethical, but also secure integration and implementation when it comes to, you know, incorporating these technologies in their day-to-day, whilst, of course, aligning with regulatory compliance and mitigated risk?
Oh, threat of cyber attacks is now everywhere, be it from using social media networking sites or even something that my wife enjoys thoroughly, which is online shopping. On average, though, there exist almost 45 to 50% illicit trading of personal information through these social media sites. So really, how safe can this all of can banks be in all of this as well? According to a study I read that was conducted by ImmuneWeb, their Geneva-based application security company, they stated that approximately 98% of the top 100 global fintech startups are vulnerable to cyber attacks. Now, you can really see just how serious are the threats they pose to financial institutions through risk of data breach, cloud environment security risk, availability of critical systems, and even application security risk. Now, with the economy trying to slowly pave its way through the pandemic this year, fintech innovations, they form a crucial element of the survival scheme. If my years of forecasting and trend analysis have taught me anything, is that the future of the financial system or the financial system itself lies in building a cyber risk-free ecosystem. And although it is largely the fintech startups that must be responsible to maintain the security, finance and accounting professionals can contribute significantly to strengthening the system from various attacks. Now, often the question arises as to why are finance and accounting professionals well placed to tackle cybercrime? I know it sounds strange, but it's actually true. And there are three main reasons that I know of and feel are absolute winners for why these professionals can contribute in battling cybercrime. The first of them is that accountants possess professional qualifications that allow them to actually quantify cost and perform comparative measures on the cost effectiveness of different security measures. And secondly, finance professionals possess required industry knowledge and extensive strategy input, albeit not directly in the IT field. And lastly, mitigating and ensuring that risks are managed become a second nature for accounting and finance professionals who can assess and identify threats and risks that may endanger their clients and even their organization's best interests. Now, with these professional strengths in mind, finance and accounting professionals can become actively involved in planning their company's strategy with regard to countering cybercrime. Beginning from the very top of the hierarchy, so CFOs can become integrally acquainted with the roles and responsibilities of the chief information security officer. And similarly, professionals can also tend to bridge the finance and IT department of their organization, and even students, they can opt for streams in their coursework that links to both these fields. It is my understanding that within the organization, finance professionals can determine and analyze the financial impact even of cyber attacks by advising leadership on matters of company-wide preparedness. Defining risk management strategies is another important task that can be carried out along with identifying where to best utilize resources to actually counter cyber threat. Accountants, they can leverage their familiarity with compliance issues in order to stay on the forefront of legal and regulatory measures that increase liabilities and penalties for organizations in the event of data breaches. And along with staying on the front line and protecting the company's valuable financial data, complying with protocols and regulations initiated by various organizations and governments to ensure cyber risk-free systems is the bare minimum that any professional within the organization can do. Now, UAE's banking and finance security innovation drove the GCC's cybersecurity market to an $8 billion market in 2019. And as a result, finance and accounting professionals who can actively manage IT issues will have an edge over their peers and be in high demand.
This has been Count Me In, IMA's podcast, providing you with the latest perspectives of thought leaders from the accounting and finance profession. If you like what you heard and you'd like to be counted in for more relevant accounting and finance education, visit IMA's website at www.imanet.org.